Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Mario Ritter Jr. and Anne Ball. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Mario Ritter Jr.
Russia's President Vladimir Putin and China's President Xi Jinping are two of the most powerful rulers in the world. Now, both have moved to extend their hold on power. Last week, Putin announced major constitutional changes that experts say will extend his control beyond the end of his term in 2024. Many note the similarity of the move to what Xi did in 2018. That year, Xi had China's constitution changed to remove term limits on the Chinese head of state. China and Russia have important influence in world events. China is economically strong. Its military is growing quickly in strength. Russia has shown that it is willing to become involved in conflicts such as Syria's civil war, and to influence elections in other countries. It has used cyber attacks and misinformation to gain influence. David Zweig is a professor emeritus of social science at the Hong Kong University of Science and Technology. He said Putin and Xi show a tendency of authoritarian leaders to hold on to power as long as possible, often dying in office. Very few authoritarian leaders give up power, always convinced that only they can save the country, which also justifies and makes their hunger for power morally correct, Zweig said. Although similar, the systems that Xi and Putin lead have notable differences. Xi has often brought attention to the fall of the former Soviet Union as a danger to the Chinese Communist Party's rule. The Chinese government has crushed opposition and is increasing its control of the economy and civil society. It has created the appearance of complete unity around Xi. In Russia, however, some parts of a multi-party democracy remain, although opposition leaders are jailed on a usual basis. Russia also has faced severe international restrictions since it seized Crimea from Ukraine in 2014. Russia's constitution requires Putin to leave office when his term ends in 2024, after serving two consecutive terms. He has proposed amendments to the Constitution that would give the lower house of parliament, the Duma, the power to choose the prime minister. Putin's changes include increasing the importance of a body few have heard of before, the State Council. Currently, the body which includes local and federal officials, is supposed to be advisory and is led by the president. Putin wants more power for the group, which oversees national security issues. Sergei Radchenko is a professor of international relations at Cardiff University. He believes either the prime minister position or a place on the state council would permit Putin to extend his influence past 2024. Putin has led Russia for more than 20 years, making his rule the longest since leader Joseph Stalin. He is known for often biting criticism of the West and a concern for his public image. Xi's move to end term limits on the Chinese presidency in March 2018 was met with almost no dissent. The son of a former high communist official, Xi became the head of the party in 2012. He then began increasing his power through a major anti-corruption campaign and by silencing opposition of all kinds. Xi's removal of term limits is considered an attack on former leader Deng Xiaoping's attempt to ease power away from individual leaders. Deng sought to avoid a repeat of the cult of personality which followed Communist China's first leader, Mao Zedong. Many Chinese blame such support for the 10 years of political violence of the Cultural Revolution, which ended in 1976. China observers note that unlike earlier leaders, Xi has not shown who might be his successor, causing many to believe he plans to remain leader for a long time. I'm Mario Ritter, Jr.
Call it luck, but not dumb luck. Just 3 days into Wolf Sukir's summer internship with the American Space Agency, NASA, he found a new planet. The 17-year-old high school student was tasked with looking through data from a telescope in search of evidence of planets outside our solar system.
I was pretty much spending my summer looking at graphs on a computer screen.
And on his third day with NASA, Sukir found it, a previously unknown planet orbiting two stars. Sukir was looking at data produced by NASA's Transiting Exoplanet Survey satellite, known as TESS. Although he did not see the physical planet, he saw clear evidence of it.
I couldn't say that I was confident it was a planet because it was day three on the job, and I couldn't say anything with confidence quite yet. But out of the 100 different targets that I looked at, I remember I put about 10 asterisks next to this one. saying that this one looks good, we should look at this one first.
The planet is 1,300 light years from Earth. What Sukhir had found was evidence of changes in the light of the two stars called binary stars. The way scientists see such a distant planet is by changes in light. If a planet is moving between the telescope and the star it orbits, it produces an effect similar to an eclipse that we see here on Earth. In other words, the planet blocks some of the sun's light from the telescope. In graphs and other data, this shows up as a dip, a line that moves down and then up again. Later that day, Sukhir met with his boss, Veselin Kostov, to go over his find. The high school student was working with a team of scientists at NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center in Maryland, not far from Washington, D.C. NASA has about 2,000 interns across the country each year. Kostov told VOA that Sukhir came into his office and told him he had something that looks interesting. It was a really exciting couple of hours to make sure what they saw was real, Kostov said. Once we were pretty confident that they were mostly real, we reached out to the rest of the team, Kostov said. Other team members found more transits of the planet, giving them more evidence. Because the planet is so big, NASA scientists believe it is made of gas, like Saturn or Jupiter. Even if it had been rocky, like Earth, the planet seems to be too close to one of the stars to be able to support life. A team of NASA scientists, including Sukhir, submitted the finding to a scientific journal. The work will be published soon. Reading scientific journals in his classes at Scarsdale High School in New York is what brought Sukhir to his internship at NASA. Under the supervision of two high school teachers, he and other students in the program study a science field of their choice. Sukhir settled on the field of astrobiology. He contacted people at NASA to help him gain an internship. While at NASA in the summer of 2018, he studied Goldilocks zones, planets that have conditions that could support life. NASA invited Sukhir back the following summer, and that is when he found the planet. NASA's Kostov holds a doctoral degree from Johns Hopkins University. Both he and Sukhir have advice for students wanting to study the stars. First, study physics and math. Other than that, Sukhir says it was both luck and putting in the hard work that led to his discovery.
Yes, what I did is impressive, but it also didn't take that many special skills. So if someone is interested in science, like my age, and even if they don't have training, they should still just reach out to researchers and find something that they can do, because almost anyone can look through data looking for dips. It just happened to me who saw this one.
Since the news broke earlier this month, Sukhir has told his story to many media organizations. He says that even though it has been fun, the attention is a bit overwhelming. As for his future, Sukhir plans to study either physics or astrophysics in college. He hopes to attend Stanford, Princeton, or MIT, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, next autumn. But first comes his high school graduation this spring. I'm Ann Ball.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. In September of 1901, President William McKinley was assassinated. His vice president, Theodore Roosevelt, was sworn in to replace him. Roosevelt was 42 years old, the youngest man ever to hold the office of President of the United States. Maurice Joyce and Shep O'Neill tell the story of President Theodore Roosevelt and his administration.
Theodore Roosevelt became president at the beginning of the 20th century. It was a time of rapid changes in American society. The changes were a result of technology. Great progress had been made, for example, in transportation. Almost every American city had a street railroad or trolley. These systems were powered by electricity. Thousands of Americans owned automobiles, and Henry Ford was planning a low-cost version which even more people could buy. Great progress had been made in communications. There were telephones in almost every business office in the cities and in many homes. And Italian inventor Guglielmo Marconi had sent the first wireless message across the Atlantic Ocean.
It was clear that the United States had made great progress in technology. Yet many believed it had made little progress in social issues. These people felt America's natural resources were being misused. They felt America's farmers were poorer than they should be. They felt America's industries were unfair to workers. Since the late 1800s, a spirit of reform had been growing in the United States. It started among farmers and led to the creation of a new political party, the Populists. Then organized labor joined the movement. Then middle-class Americans. Not everyone agreed on ways to solve society's problems, but they were united in the belief that social progress had to be made. The future of American democracy, they said, depended on the success of the progressive movement. The man who came to represent the spirit of reform most of all was the new president, Theodore Roosevelt.
Roosevelt was born to a wealthy family in New York City in 1858. He was a weak child with poor eyesight. He spent much of his time reading. When Theodore was 13 years old, he got into an argument with two other boys. He tried to fight them, but he was not strong enough. That incident was a turning point in Roosevelt's life. He decided to overcome his physical weaknesses through exercise and hard work. He lifted weights, ran long distances, and learned how to be a boxer. He continued these activities while he attended Harvard University. After college, Roosevelt married Alice Lee and returned to New York. He became active in the Republican Party. When he was just 23 years old, he was elected to the state legislature. Roosevelt quickly became known as a reform politician. He denounced all forms of dishonesty in government.
Roosevelt's first political career did not last long. He withdrew after 4 years, following the deaths of his wife and mother. His sadness was so great that he could not continue. Roosevelt moved to a ranch in the Dakota Territory of the American West. He began to raise beef cattle. At first, the local cowboys laughed at him. They called him Four Eyes because he wore eyeglasses. They stopped laughing when they found he could do the hard work of a cowboy as well as any of them.
Roosevelt spent 2 years in the West. Then he returned to New York and a life in politics. He became the Republican candidate for mayor of New York City, but lost the election. Then he campaigned for Republican Benjamin Harrison in the presidential election of 1888. Harrison won. And he named Roosevelt head of the Federal Civil Service Commission. Roosevelt fought hard to keep politics out of the civil service. Democrat Grover Cleveland was elected president 4 years later. He approved of Roosevelt's civil service reforms. He asked him to remain in the job. Roosevelt did so for another 2 years. Then he became commissioner of police in New York City. Once again, he pushed for reforms. He removed policemen found guilty of receiving illegal payments.
In 1897, President William McKinley named Theodore Roosevelt Assistant Secretary of the Navy. The United States went to war against Spain a year later. Roosevelt wanted an active part in the war, so he resigned and joined the Army. He organized a force of horse soldiers known as the Rough Riders. They were honored for bravery in the Battle of San Juan Hill in Cuba. Roosevelt was now a war hero. Republican Party leaders in New York thought he would be the perfect candidate for governor. Teddy, as the public called him, won a close election. He soon made clear he would not take orders from party leaders. The new governor proposed controls on businesses. His main targets were companies that supplied the public with water, electricity, and natural gas. He demanded changes in the food and drug industries, and he shortened the workday for women and children.
The public praised Roosevelt's reform efforts. Local party leaders did not. As one said, "I do not want him raising hell in my state any longer. Local leaders decided the best way to get him out of New York politics was to support him for Vice President of the United States. The office gave a man very little voice or power in politics. Roosevelt did not want the job for that reason. By then, he wanted just one thing, to be President of the United States. He was sure being Vice President would ruin his chances. But he accepted the nomination at the National Convention. He would run on the ticket with William McKinley. Sadly, he said, I do not expect to go any further in politics. Several months after he was sworn in as Vice President, he was sworn in as President. William McKinley was dead. Theodore Roosevelt became president as the result of an assassin's bullet.
Roosevelt promised party leaders that he would continue McKinley's policies. He said he would move slowly in making any changes. In his first message to Congress, President Roosevelt offered a few new proposals. He asked for a Department of Commerce and Labor to deal with industrial problems. He called for a stronger Navy and for limits on immigration. And he proposed building a canal in Central America to link the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans.
Businessmen who feared the worst when Roosevelt became president began to breathe easier. It seemed he was not going to push for reforms after all. But Roosevelt was only following an old hunting rule of African tribesmen. Speak softly, the rule said, and carry a big stick. Roosevelt spoke softly during his first months as president. He would use the big stick later. When the blow came, it was against big business. A group of wealthy railroad owners had agreed to join their railroads into one. They formed a company to control it. The new company would have complete control of railroad transportation in the American West. There would be no competition.
President Roosevelt believed the company violated the Sherman antitrust law. The law said it was illegal for businesses to interfere with trade among the states. The law also said it was illegal for any person or group to get control of a whole industry. Since the antitrust law had been passed in 1890, few companies had been found guilty of violating it. So, many people were shocked when Roosevelt announced he was taking action under the law against the railroad trust. He said there could be no compromise in how the law was enforced.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.